This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Paul Craig Roberts to the show. He is a nationally syndicated columnist for Creators Syndicate and former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration. He's co-founder of Reaganomics and former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, Scripps Howard News Service, and author of How America Was Lost, From 9/11 to the Police / Welfare State, and The Tyranny of Good Intentions, How Prosecutors and Law Enforcement Are Trampling the Constitution in the Name of Justice. These are all very interesting topics. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome to the show. How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Where are you located? Are you in Washington, by chance?
Oh, no, I've left Washington.
You're not in the belly of the beast anymore.
Part of the year in the Gulf of Mexico and part of the year in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Fantastic. Oh, that's a beautiful area. The Blue Ridge Mountains are gorgeous. Well, good. I don't know exactly where to start, but I would definitely like to talk about the economy and most notably maybe Russia. There's a lot of talk about the ruble collapsing, how Russians are trying to soak up dollars and run toward the safety of the currency, our currency, which is not exactly well managed, but maybe in comparison it is. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, the ruble is not collapsing. It's being driven down by the United States. It's part of it's an act of war, actually. The ruble is driven down by short selling. And it's not clear whether it's the Fed and the Treasury or whether it's the big hedge funds, or all of them, but compared to the dollar, the ruble is in good shape because unlike the United States, which has a massive trade deficit, the Russians have a trade surplus, and unlike the United States, which has a massive public debt, 100 or more percent of GDP, the Russian public debt is some tiny fraction of GDP, something 14, maybe 20%. And so what should be happening is the dollar should be collapsing. But economic forces are not in the picture. It's not economic forces driving down the ruble. It's short selling. It's either officially done or it's done with official blessing.
How do the oil prices, the oil prices have just deflated so much. How do those play into it, though? That's got to have some real impact on Russia, right?
Well, it would have more impact on the United States because the cost of producing oil in Russia is below the cost of the United States. The average cost of Russia is less than here. In fact, the biggest effect of the oil price decline is probably going to be on the fracking industry in the United States. To put them out of business, and since they have so many loans with the banks and there's so many derivatives associated with them, you're probably going to see another serious financial crisis like the one we had over the mortgage-backed security. So the most likely effect of the oil price decline will be on the United States. And because all the derivatives are interrelated with the European banking system, you may see bank crisis throughout the Western world. So I don't think it's of any specific attention to Russia. It's a problem that will have far more adverse effects on the United States fracking industry and all of their debt instruments and the derivatives associated with them.
Well, so your view, would you agree that your view is somewhat counterintuitive, or at least counter to popular opinion nowadays? Maybe not counterintuitive, but...
Certainly not counterintuitive. There's no such thing. I mean, it's popular opinion. You mean the propaganda that comes out?
If you want to call it that, sure.
Yeah. Lies. Yeah. Lies comes out of Washington and the financial press. Yeah, well, all they do is lie. They never tell the truth about anything. I mean, I don't know anything they've ever said that's been correct.
I would not disagree with you for a moment there. I would definitely not disagree with you. So is it, I mean, you know, the BRICS, several nations, in fact, are trying to trade outside of the dollar. And, you know, that reserve currency advantage that America enjoys is a huge advantage because we can wantonly print and do all kinds of things to take advantage of the system. Do you think that will last, or do you think the reserve currency status will go away?
Oh, yeah, I think it's on the verge of being overturned, mainly for two reasons. One is the quantitative easing created so many new dollars that weren't matched by the output of goods and services, that the value of the dollar is no longer tenable. It's held up, of course, by the pressure the United States is able to put on the Bank of Japan to print money even quicker than Washington, and on the European Central Bank to print in order to support the sovereign debt, so that the European banks don't go belly up. So it's all the printing of fiat currencies that protects the dollar's exchange rate, because everyone else is printing, even the Swiss. But of course the Russians are not printing. One reason we'll lose the reserve currency is the dollar is being oversupplied. And also, of course, dollar-denominated debt. You know, the amazing rapid escalation in U.S.-issued debt will also put this pressure on the dollar. Now, the second main reason is that the rest of the world has learned that the United States abuses the role of reserve currency and uses it for financial imperialism, for financial hegemony over others. And the rest of the world is learning from the examples of Iran and Russia that the United States illegally uses the reserve currency status of the dollar to impose sanctions, to threaten people's exclusion from the SWIFT clearing system, to interfere with their currency, to interfere with their access to foreign credit. And so the rest of the world is withdrawing from this system. It's not just the BRICS. It'll also, of course, South America will join that, probably most of Asia. And as these countries cease using the dollar to settle their international accounts, the demand for dollars in the currency markets drops. And so, whereas the Fed can print all the money it wants in order to support bond prices, it can't print foreign currencies in order to support the dollar's price. So as these new mechanisms go into effect, for example, Russia is creating its own a clearing system, so it no longer will use the SWIFT system. The BRICS are creating their own IMF and World Bank, and the transactions these countries are entering into with one another are in their own currencies. They don't use the dollar. So I think you'll see such a strong drop in the use of the dollar that it will affect the dollar's value.
So that means inflation is coming, right? Where we're finally going to see the inflation we seem to deserve?
We may see it from two sources. Certainly, a collapse or just a fall in the dollar's exchange value will raise import prices. And since the United States is now import dependent, having offshored so much of its industry and so many of its professional service jobs, the prices of all of that will rise. And so when people go to Walmart, they'll think they walked into Neiman Marcus or something like that. So that's one source of it. Now, when the economy falls out, we will see more money creation. They'll try to stuff the money into the economy. You know, so far we've had a situation where the money that the Fed created with quantitative easing has been hung up in the banking system.
The question is, when will that hit the street, if you will?
Well, it's hung up in the banking system, and it's not hitting the street because the banks are in such bad situation. They can't lend, and because the consumers are so heavily in debt, they really can't borrow. But when you start seeing a substantial increase in the current recession, things start worsening rapidly, then there'll be efforts to stuff money into the economy beyond the banking system. So you would have a second form of inflation. That would be the ordinary price inflation from domestic money creation. So you've got both sources of inflation could hit.
Okay, so aren't you, though, Paul, presupposing that the U.S. will just kind of sit by and let this happen? And I mean, I understand that they can't necessarily do anything about it from a monetary standpoint directly, because, like you said, they can't prop up the value of the dollar vis-a-vis foreign currencies, right? But they can have sanctions, acts of war, all kinds of ugly things that are not fair or ethical. But the fact is, the world's a tough place. I mean,
it's going to be tough for Americans. It's going to be tough for Washington. Look, what the morons in Washington have succeeded in doing is creating a strategic alliance between Russia and China.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now,
Washington may be full of itself, but if it thinks it can take on that, it's going to get its ass kicked from one end of the world to the other. And at any time, the Russians or the Chinese can basically destroy our economy.
How can they do that, though? Because we're their customer, well, especially China. You know, I mean, we're far and away their biggest customer. Why would they want to destroy us?
Why would they care about that? If you're trying to hurt a country, they don't. It's a lot cheaper for them to destroy us and lose a few customers than to go to war.
Well, compared to going to war, I agree with you, but compared to just having inflation.
The customer business doesn't bother them in the least. Look, what can the Russians do? Well, suppose they say, look, maybe they tell Europe, look, since you're mucking around with our currency for political reasons, we don't think we're going to pay you the loans that come due in 2015. So what do you think that would do to Europe? So those banks are so thinly capitalized. One of the banks, it's 62% of its capital is tied up in a loan to Russia. So all Russia's got to do is say, well, we're not really going to default, but since you're beating up our currency, we think we'll have to wait until the ruble recovers before we pay you. Well, the European banking system would collapse. Think about all the swaps, all the derivatives. The American.
So what would that do to the U.S.? Yeah.
Well, that's one thing they can do. That doesn't take but a few words. They don't even have to load a gun. What else could they do? Putin can destroy NATO in 5 seconds. All he has to do is call up the Europeans and say, hey, we've decided we no longer sell natural gas to members of NATO. Then what does Europe face? Germany faces the close down of some 30 to 40% of its industry. You're talking about unemployment rates around 30, 40%, freezing people in the winter. This throughout East and West Europe. How long do you think NATO would exist? Instantly cease to exist. So, but why doesn't, what could the Chinese do? Well, they could simply sell all of their dollar-denominated assets. Now, it's true the Fed could print the money and step in and buy them and prevent the price of treasuries from tanking. So they could prevent the sale of the Chinese treasury position from destroying the U.S. bond market. But, no, that wouldn't make any difference. But they can't stop the next step, because when the Chinese get the trillion-plus dollars, they dump those. The Fed has got no way to buy those dollars up. So what would happen to the dollar in the currency market? Collapse. If it collapses, the whole financial house of cards collapses. Right, skyrocket, every bank, all the big banks would fail, everything would fail. It would be so the whole Western world can be destroyed in a few minutes by either of those two countries. Why don't they do it? Well, because what the United States is trying to do to them is not really hurting them that much. I don't really know what the impact of the fall in the ruble's value is on Russia. If I was Putin or the Russian Central Bank, I would be sitting there saying, hey, this could be a good thing, because let's hope they drive the ruble down really, really low, because we're sitting on a huge stock of dollars, and we can buy up all the rubles at practically no cost and get them out of the foreign exchange markets, and then they can't bother our currency anymore. So I'm not sure that what's happening is actually hurting Russia. We get a lot of propaganda from idiots and fools and liars and propagandists who like to pretend we're so powerful and can lord it over other people. But if it's not really hurting them very much, I suspect that what Russia and China will continue to do is essentially ignore it and go on and recreate the world over, this time under their leadership. There'll be a new trade bloc, larger than the Western one, that has nothing to do with the West. And that's what's happening in front of our eyes right now. And when the Chinese foreign minister said yesterday or today that any help Russia needs, they'll get it from China, that they understand that they have a common strategic interest and a common enemy. And so China, of course, unlike the United States, has massive reserves. The United States hasn't got any unless it can borrow them from Japan or euros from the European Central Bank. And so you're faced here with a situation where the arrogant fools in Washington, wallowing in their hubris, are picking a fight with two countries that are much better positioned economically than the United States. The only source of strength the United States has is the reserve status of the dollar, because that lets the United States pay its bills by printing money. It's the main source of American power.
It's a pretty good deal for the U.S., that's for sure, as long as it can keep it going. It's a big sham, but it's quite a good position to be in while you have it.
But it's a house of cards, because fundamentals don't support the dollar. It's supported by these rigged mechanisms. Japan has to print dollars faster than America. The European Central Bank has to print them as fast. So does Switzerland. So does everybody else. that's part of the Western system, or they aren't part of it. Being an American vassal means you support the dollar. But, of course, China and Russia and India and South American countries and much of Asia, they're not American vassals. And you see increasingly currency swap agreements made between China and even American allies like Great Britain. So I think that the Washington people, I spent 25 years there. I never met 12 intelligent people.
I love it.
And what they're doing, they're picking on people that can whip their butt. And it could happen. Or, as I suspect, simply Russia and China are going to turn their back on the West and create their own world economy. And it will exclude the Europeans and the Americans and the Canadians and the Australians and the Mexicans.
All right. So can I chime in here for a moment? I would, and listen, just so you know, I am by no means being an apologist for the U.S., okay? I used to beat this drum about currency collapse and all of this stuff, and I still think it's possible, okay? I still think we could see, you know, some very significant inflation. However, I just want to temper it with a few concepts. You know, we have that reserve currency status. If Russia and China really had their own middle class base of consumers, I'd be right there with you. If Russia and China, I mean, granted, we don't want to get into military stuff, but the U.S., even if it's financed by fiat currency, still has the biggest military the world has ever known. And also, you know, Russia and China have giant demographic problems that in the next 10 years, I mean, Russia is a dying country, quite literally. And China, with its one-child policy, 10 years from now, has got a major demographic problem starting to hit it. Whereas the U.S., granted, it's not through, you know, birth rates of European Americans, but, you know, we've been very receptive to immigration, and we're immigrating our way out of a demographic problem. So at least there's some young people coming in to support the older people. Granted, it's still a mess, and Social Security is insolvent. I know that, but it's not as bad. I'm just making a comparison to other countries. And then the last thing I'd like to just point out is I mean, look at the innovation and the technology that might just save our rear ends. I don't know, you know, and it's not all exclusive to America, but America is certainly it's a pretty innovative place. You got to admit that.
No, it's not.
No? Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Tell me more.
When you offshore your manufacturing, you lose the ability to innovate because you're no longer in touch with the production process. You have the foggiest idea of how to innovate anything.
Okay.
So, and of course, the United States doesn't any longer have a middle class.
Well, the middle class is diminishing.
All the middle class jobs have been offshore for the last 15 years. Not just the well-paying manufacturing jobs, but all of the jobs that college graduates used to take, such as software engineering, information technology, all these are offshore.
Even call centers, you know? I mean, I agree it's diminishing, but it's still better than it is.
No, there's no middle class there. Didn't you see the Federal Reserve report a week or two ago? They surveyed, they were trying to find out why the bottom had fallen out of first-time home buyers. So they did a survey of the 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds, and they found out that almost 50% of 25-year-olds are back home living with their parents, and 30% of 30-year-olds, now these are people who should be well advanced in their career, 30% of 30-year-olds are back home living with their parents. And why is this? Because they cannot get jobs that pay enough for them to have an independent household. So if you've got, I think the figure was 47 or 48% of 25-year-olds, and many of these are college graduates with extensive student loans. They're living at home with their parents in their childhood rooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I know, it's the boomerang generation. I agree.
There's no middle class. And of course, the Russian birth rate has turned around. It was down during the period of the following the dissolution of the Soviet Union, when our agent Yeltsin was running the place for us. And when they had that crazy austerity policy imposed on them by the Harvard idiots. And so, but that's not there anymore. Their birth rate's turned around. The Chinese, they have such a massive population. But besides, in 10 years, the dollar will not be the reserve currency. It's not going to last 10 years. It's a house of cards. We don't know what's going to come out of the, as I've already said, the falling price of oil has got to disrupt all the oil derivatives. All of the fracking companies who were conducting massive loans when oil was over $100 a barrel, it's now 60. How are they going to surface it? They're not. And so, and all of that crappy loans are all mixed up in derivatives, just like the mortgage-backed securities. So what you're looking at, where all the economic vulnerabilities are in the United States. The vulnerabilities the United States have are mountains. They're like the Himalayas compared to the molehills in China and Russia.
Right. Yeah, very, very interesting. So do you have a prediction as to how much inflation we might see and when? Any thoughts on that? It's a very important question to investors.
Well, you know, we already have substantial inflation. It's just they don't measure it. Since I was in the Treasury, the way they measure inflation has been altered in two ways that lead to a dramatic understatement of inflation. One thing they do is, if a price goes up, they simply say it's a quality improvement and don't count it. Now, in some of those cases, it actually is a quality improvement, but it's overdone. The other way they do it is, if the price of something in the index goes up, they throw it out and put a cheaper thing in. It's a substitution. They say, well, consumers do that, so, but it no longer measures the cost of a constant standard of living. It measures a falling standard of living. If the price of prime rib goes up and you stick in round steak, in order to avoid counting that as a price rise, then you are measuring a lower standard of living. And so, as John Williams has pointed out over and over, if you...
Shadow stats, yeah. I had him on the show, yeah.
Yeah, if you use the 1990 official methodology, the inflation rate's over 5% annually. If you use the 1980 official methodology, it's close to 10%. And if you talk to any one who does grocery shopping, I mean, I see it myself.
Yeah, I see it too, and I agree, and I was beating the drum about how much inflation we really do have. Until about a year ago, it really did seem to subside, even with the BS, the way they measure it, you know, weighting, substitution, hedonics.
It certainly hadn't subsided in food or anything that we buy. Let's see, the last 3 years, I've been undergoing massive home improvements and repairs, really. And just watching the price of the same material over the 3 years, it's at least a third higher. At least a third higher, yeah. So when they tell you there's no inflation, see, the reason they concocted these inflation measures is so they don't have to pay cost of Social Security cost of living increases. So they cheat the people on Social Security, and they cheat anybody else.
Well, all the government employees, all the entitlements, everything, you know. It saves the government money to lie about inflation, and it gets people reelected, too.
It's quite high, actually, in terms of materials and food. And so,
How bad do you think it'll get? Do you think we'll see 20% inflation, worse than Carter era type stuff?
Oh, it could be a hyperinflation.
Which means 100% annually? What does that mean? Hyperinflation doesn't have an exact definition, so I always like to ask my guests what theirs is.
Well, it's a huge range, hyperinflation, but it could certainly be much more than 20%. But when you're import dependent, as we are, you know, you have to keep in mind, too, that more than half of our so-called imports are actually the offshore production of American firms. So when it comes back in, it counts as imports. And so unless these American firms are just going to go out of business, if the dollar drops, then the cost of their offshore production rises. So all those prices have to go up when they bring it back in. This is what I say. You're going to, the time will come when people walk in Walmart and they think they've walked in Neiman Marcus because prices will be so dramatic. So the if the dollar falls, then the exchange rate will cause very high inflation. And that will produce a crisis. And the Federal Reserve's likely response to the crisis will be money creation. And not the kind that just goes to the banks for their reserves, but the inflation kind.
It's about the only tool they really have, unfortunately.
Is to print money. So, and of course, once you get inflation, they can't control bond prices. So the interest rates explode.
And the bond market will collapse.
You know. Even though the economy is dropping. So you can have a situation, this is what people understand, you can have a situation where you have inflation and depression at the same time. We've never had that.
Yep, that's the misery index times five. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. We've never had that, and economic policy has no solution for that.
See, that's what people don't understand, and I'm really glad you pointed that out, because what has to give in that equation is the standard of living. The standard of living just, it has to decline. A lot of this wealth is illusory. It's just a smoke and mirrors illusion that we've been living maybe since 1971, possibly. I don't know. And I'm referring to the gold standard, of course.
Well, actually, the real median family income is actually lower now than it was in the late 60s. So people are already suffering, and we have a record percentage of the population on food stamps. We have record homelessness, and there's still a lot of home mortgages that are underwater in the sense that the house is not worth the mortgage, but people are still paying it because they got to have a place to live. So there's plenty of room for a lot of suffering, more suffering. And so the wealth of the so-called 1% is paper. And when this hits, all these paper assets, they drop like a stone, too. So all the billionaires will disappear as well. So it's not, in my opinion, a hopeful outlook, and I think it's very foolish of Washington to be picking fights with the Russians and the Chinese. And it's very foolish of Washington to be convincing these two well-armed nuclear countries that Washington is their enemy. Now, the so-called American military, it's not clear that it's all that good either. We fought for 13 years in Afghanistan against a few thousand lightly armed Taliban, and we weren't able to win. We were in Iraq 8 years, and we weren't able to win. And not long ago, we sent one of our newest super-duper missile ships into the Black Sea and stationed it right there near the Russian naval base in Crimea to show what a powerful technological marvel we were. And the Russians flew one jet fighter over it. And every communication system in the ship went down. So the notion that we have all of this is just propaganda from the military complex that wants the money. And it wasn't long ago when we were prancing around that the Chinese sent up a missile and blew one of their own satellites out of space. So that told us they can make us blind whenever they want to. So this notion that we have some kind of military superiority, it's nonsense. And if the United States has no possibility of invading Russia or China, if we were to invade Russia or China, the whole army would be destroyed. So the war that they're heading toward is nuclear, and there's no winner of that. Nobody wins.
No, there's certainly no winner of that. Paul, what is the solution? I mean, you've done a great job outlining the problem. I mean, what should we be doing? We should curtail our spending. We should not pick fights with big enemies like that, or anybody for that matter. We can't get out of this mess with curtailing our spending and raising taxes. We're just too far in the hole, aren't we? I mean, it seems like the only way out is to inflate. It's the only question is whether that is, severe or moderate.
That's what they've been trying to do, because they believe in the Phillips curve. They believe that if you want economic growth, you have to pay for it with inflation.
Right, right. And as long as the GDP is increasing and the population is increasing proportionally, that isn't the end of the world. But that's not happening, is it?
That's right. If it was, you wouldn't see declines in real median family income. So, no, you can't grow an economy without growth in income or credit. And Greenspan used up the credit. He substituted the growth in credit for the missing growth in income with his real estate boom. And in other words, the low interest rates drove up housing prices so people could refinance their mortgages and spend the equity. And that kept the economy going during the Greenspan era.
And before that, he did it with the stock market. It's like they move from bubble to bubble, these people. It's just ridiculous, you know. And Bernanke, same deal. I don't know. We'll see what Janet Yellen's like. But
it's all bubble now. You know, the stocks, there's no basis for the stock values. The largest purchases of stock are the companies buying back their own shares. The main source of profits is layoffs. There's no retail sales supporting anything. And so the whole thing, as I've said over and over, is a house of cards standing on the dollar, which itself is a house of cards. Well, I think we've covered it. Now, just because there are problems doesn't mean there are solutions. And I think we've passed solutions, and the solution is going to be some kind of collapse. And I don't think it's avoidable. It may already be starting to unwind. I mean, come back to the question. What is the state of all the fracking loans based on $100 plus barrel of oil? What's the state of those? Who holds them? What are the derivatives drawn off on them? What are all the credit default swaps? What does this picture look like? And did they think about it when they decided to try to hurt Russia through the oil price? Or hurt Russia through the ruble's exchange value? Did they think? No, they didn't. They're not smart enough to think about it. They're hubris. They're full of hubris. They're arrogant. I know them. Spent 25 years with them. Beat myself. I never met 12 intelligent people in Washington.
I love that. And I think you're probably right.
Well, I think we've covered it. I need to go now. I'm sorry I don't have any solutions to give you. Of course, the best solution would be to, we don't need a $1.1 trillion military security complex. The only enemies we have are the ones we create for ourselves in order to keep the military security entitlement going. It'd be cheaper just to give them a share of the budget and not even have them make the weapons. That would be a lot safer than having to go around starting wars so that we can take the taxpayers' money to give to the military security complex, which we don't need. All the enemies we have, we create. Look, we've been bombing and murdering people in 7 countries for 13 years. Now they're picking on Russia.
And that's a big fight to pick, so let's hope that we don't do it. Hopefully Obama will just get busy planning his library, and he'll be on his way out soon.
Yeah, but the military security complex won't be on its way.
They're there all the time.
All right, well, I enjoyed speaking to you.
Okay, and I just want to give out your website. It's paulcraigroberts.org, paulcraigroberts.org. And Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.